Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Steph Orm from Emmanuel College in Boston.
And I'm Brian McCauley here at the Media Management and Transformation Center in Sweden and the city of DreamHack, which is Jönköping. And our guest today is Carl or Kalle Uglund, who is a former Swedish policeman who spent the last 10 years in Finland and can be best described as one of the pioneers of esports education in Finland. So, Kalle, or Carl, whichever you wish to be called, welcome to the show and tell us about yourself.
Oh, I'm Carl. I have been working for the last 10 years as a remedial teacher. Got very interesting in games in education and gamification and stuff like this. And I stumbled into the esport in education part in the fall of 2015, the same year as they did it in Sweden, actually. I'm located in the Helsinki area, just outside Helsinki, in Espoo. And I've been working inside Helsinki.
Great. Well, we're so excited to have you here. So we often like to start off, as many of our listeners know by now, by asking what your definition or what your understanding of esports is. So how would you describe esports in your own words?
Oh, I usually don't have to do this anymore because esports is a sport in Finland. And it's a sport in Finland because of three reasons. The first
you're an advanced,
that,
you're an advanced culture that's doing things
yeah,
right.
We
for
are
a start.
An advanced culture. You can do your military service in the special army units as an esport professional. That's number one. And number two, you pay the same taxes as any other professional sportsman. And the third one is that the Esport Federation is a member of the Finnish Olympic Committee. So of these three reasons, we never have to talk or definite if esport is a sport or not. I have done it myself, and I got a very upset response from many of the traditional sports teachers, because in Swedish, there's a difference between sports and athletics. And to me, esport is a sport, but it at that time it was not athletic. It's not like you're doing something with your body, like football or gymnastics or something like this. But it's like sailing, more or less. And when I compared it with sailing, there was lots of teachers at the sports colleges that was very upset that I compared e-sport, a computer game, with sailing, as there was so much physics involved in sailing. But that's, in the matter of fact, there's lots of physical training also in e-sport.
Look, that's a nice answer. It's so nice to say, look, it's a sport. I love hearing that. I mean, maybe Sweden should have just got a piece of paper and said, it's a sport in Finland, handed it to the committee. And said, oh, the Finnish, oh, we can't let that go. That would have worked.
That's actually one funny part, because Sweden struggles with to be a member of this national sports umbrella organization, Riksidrottsförbundet. But in Finland, and I know that in Finland, you talk Finnish for 92% or something, and then you talk Swedish for another 8%. But in the Swedish community, the national umbrella organization for traditional sport has recently adopted e-sport as a sport like any other sport. And they also have arranged the first school championship in Rocket League this spring.
So
and that's, I think it's the right signals, and it's a very, it should be a scoop. I don't understand why it's not a scoop when a traditional sport umbrella organization takes on esport.
I don't either, but sure. Look, we're going to go again in 2 years here in Sweden, and maybe I'll learn Swedish by then and actually be able to contribute a little bit more. Anyway, so I'm happy here in Sweden with my Icelandic mini horses, which are a sports club now. You know, I can't wait to actually see one and talk to one or whatever they do. So the first question we have here, Carl, is what is Esports EDU, which is your website and part of what you're doing? How would you describe that to someone?
Esports in education. You can take on three different approaches to esports in education. You can do like you do in Sweden. You want new students to your school, and then you say that you are in an esport college or something like this. You take the national curriculum for sport and health specialization in Sweden, for example, and then you treat them in the same way as you have been a soccer player, football player, or an ice hockey player. And you don't communicate that much between the esports coaches and the sports coaches. And you may be taking five students. They have to have good grades, and they have to have a talent. Then you can do the path that you take when you are an early adopter teacher, or in the United States, you start to thinking what you learn from esports or a game, and then you see how you can implement that in education. And then you can do the third path, and that's the hard path. And I have done it. And it's how you can ask the esport organization or the esport world, what skills do you want us, the school, to teach the students? And that's a bit surprising, because none of them has said, let them play more games. Hmm. Because they don't need to play more games. There's so much else, other skills that is more important than to play the games. For example, I found in among our esports students three very good players in Hearthstone, but none of the Finnish esports organization wanted to hire them or sign a contract with them, and they were literally better than the one the organization had. But my students hadn't thought about the branding or marketing themselves. They didn't have any social media profile. There was no record on them anywhere, and therefore the organization wasn't interested in them. So marketing and branding is a huge demand or skill that the organization wants us to teach the students. And that's pretty far away from the gaming.
Okay, so I'm just going to clarify something for Steph. You might notice, and this is quite interesting about the Finnish education system. So to be a teacher in Finland, you have to have at least a master's degree, firstly, very well educated. The other things about Finland is that
it's college level or all levels?
All levels, right? And then they've won some of the best educational outcomes in the world compared to the sweatshop format of some Asian countries where this, you know, task them over and over. And there's another thing where they actually get the smarter kids to sort of tutor the kids that are behind in class. So they're teaching them, which as teachers, all of us here have taught, and we understand the secret truth of teaching is that as you teach something at university or in school, you start to understand it better yourself. You find yourself, you know, because you keep teaching these concepts and you keep enhancing yourself. So they have kids guiding the weaker kids and working together. And I'm sure there's more, Carl, is it? I'm sort of missing here, but it is probably the best education system in the world if you don't want to spend 12 hours a day studying, like which you might do in certain countries.
We actually talked about it the other day, and it's also that the teacher or the adult one is the adult one in the classroom. Meaning that in Sweden, for example, if you have a student that starts a fight, you can't, as a Swedish teacher, take him out from the classroom. You're not allowed to to physically drag him outside the classroom. But in Finland, you have the right to do it. And you have to, you can't use any sticks or something like this, but you can use your body to, and it says you have can use the body to drag out the fighting student from the classroom. And also that, and this is a bit interesting, we call it in English, warrant order, to search through a locker.
Ask me, my Swedish is so bad.
Yeah, but if you're a police officer and you want to open a locker or a suitcase, you have to have a...
like a warrant.
Yeah, the warrant from a prosecutor. Mm. But the Finnish law says that the teacher is allowed to do it. If I know that I have one student with a golf club in his locker room, I can open it or demand it to be open and take away it from him because it's dangerous.
So and now Carl has a full set of golf clubs that he uses on the weekend.
Yeah, right.
So it's a great education system with a couple of loopholes, right? So in terms of esports education, how have you taken advantage of this fantastic system or the loopholes, or how is this, you know, and it is an amazing education system. How has this helped you to push esports, or conversely, what challenges have there been within this system to pushing esports education?
When it comes to the curriculum, and this is, was a bit surprising, on the vocational level, you study 180 points during 3 years. And it turned out that 15 points of these, I can write a curriculum on myself. Meaning I can put up the goals, how you fulfill them, what you're reading, how you've been grading for 15 points. So I can put up a concept from what I learned that the Finnish organization wanted. And I wanted physical training. So our students, we have 80 esports students, I think. They go to the gym every Monday morning, start it 8 o'clock in the, and doing some exercise for 1 hour, and then they should have a breakfast that school pays them to have a good start on the week. And then they have like 3 points of physical or sport-related.
So this is within esport educational programs, or you know, that you put the physical part as part of a whole esports education program. Yeah. So just to clarify, go back here a second. So you're offering full qualifications in esports.
I offer 15 points of 180.
This
is also very. I recently learned that the reason why it's not an esport education in Finland yet is because that the esport organization haven't contacted the board of education and said, hey, we want to have this education, we have need of this education. And once they understand that they can do it, they can apply and say to the board of education, now we need to have this 3 years education on vocational or college. And they give it to a university or something to develop it. It's a bit different how I thought it would work, and a bit different how it works in Sweden.
I mean, what is esports like in Finland? What's the current scene like? I mean, you have Ents. I mean, there's lots. I don't have that as my music, but quite often I get my ass kicked in CSGO and I hear and I'm going, oh, there a song goes again that somebody killed me, got an MVP. I mean, what's the whole scene like in maybe compared to Sweden or Denmark or all those other major rivals?
They, of course, they're smaller. When I started this in 2015, Ense was the only one who could pay salary to the esport players. in 2018, I think it was 20 players. And now I think it's around 100. So it's not very good and very big yet, but it's growing very fast. But how to say it, from a teacher's perspective, it's very strange, because ENCE, for example, had changed the team members very, very, very many times during this past 5 years. I think the first year between 2015 and 2016, they changed it. They had 10 members. And that's interesting from a teacher kind of view, because it's clearly something that is missing.
Hmm.
And it's not the game itself that is missing. The lack team spirit, or the lack collaboration, or the physical training, or something. It's something else than just the game or the game skills that they are clearly missing. And now I don't know what the ENCE's problem was, but generally.
They didn't shoot enough guys in the head, as far as I know. I mean, that's basically it. If you're not going well in CSGO, not enough headshots, isn't it? Okay, so we're back from our dog-induced intermission. Yep. For once, it wasn't Steph's dogs or my lovely, beautiful cats, who are so much more better behaved than both of your dogs. Steph, what were you asking about marketing and branding there before we got so interrupted by Muttley?
Yeah, no, I was just curious, because you were talking earlier about needing to teach students things like marketing and self-branding. And it's interesting to me that these organizations want students coming in with those skills already. Whereas I think of that as something that a league or a team has staff that do that. I never think of that as something that the players are really doing themselves. So I was just curious what your thoughts about that were.
It turns out I've been talking with an organization now that maybe wants to hire me as a director of esports education. And one of the owners, or the board owners, is working as a marketing professional. And he was very surprised that his players that he has hired on full-time doesn't want to take selfies with the sponsors' shirts or something like this. And he never thought about that. He didn't realize that you have to go back, because many of these players, they have avoided the school sports, because they have been bullied or something like this. And they have a very bad self-esteem. And that is mostly also for the girls. But they are they don't like being taking photos of them, have opinions. It's something that you haven't been thinking of. You haven't been thinking of that when you, because this is the experience I have with more or less all the teams we are bringing forward, or that now we found a Counter-Strike player and he is playing in one team. And they're playing excellent and they have a good communication, but they lack the branding or marketing plan. They don't, we're going to be number one in 10 months. That's all. They don't have a social media plan how to. And when you talk with them, it's we are on Snapshot. And I said, you can be on Snapshot. It's okay to be on Snapshot. But who are going to pay you a sponsorship on Snapshot?
Mm.
See, this doesn't seem like something that comes up elsewhere. You know, that's what I'm saying. Like, this doesn't seem like an issue elsewhere. It seems like they're usually, esports people are a little bit more branding and marketing orientated. They're on Twitch, they're streaming. It's You know, it's an interesting phenomenon from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you also have this the other thing that for a very long time we ask ourselves, is this a sport or not? And
it is.
As long as we have that discussion, if it's a sport or not, then we have focus on the wrong spot, because we're still arguing if it's a sport or not, and all adults, all parents, all school teachers, all traditional sport are focusing, is it a sport or not? And therefore, we have a very toxic world, and that's why they don't want to be on a selfie with a Nike shirt or a Björn Borg t-shirt or whatever, because they don't have them. They don't want to stand out to get negative feedback, because the world in obvious sport on Twitch is so toxic. And therefore, traditional sports and teachers and parents have to step in and show what sportsmanship is, or how you should behave, because that is not happening in sport at the moment.
I mean, yeah, I would say there's some actual sort of isolation things maybe in Finland, Sweden, where, you know, that the sort of stuff that happens online can affect people. I mean, but Finland itself, right, is probably the per capita of researchers, particularly with Tampere University, one of the biggest game studies places in the world. I mean, you've got Juho Hamari with the Gamification Group, you've got Franz Meyer with his Center of Digital Excellence, right? So, you know, it's funny, you've got the only non-US president of the International Games Development Association, IGDA, VESA. He was Finnish. He's the only non-American thing. I mean, so there's a huge games culture in Sweden, both in development and in research and an increasing esports scene. So it's, if anywhere, say, like, if I had to go somewhere to sort of say, you pick a country, boom, where the research and the development and the magic happens around games and esports, it would be Finland. So, I mean.
You missed two brilliant researchers, Matilda Ståhl and Fredrik Rusk. They are linked on my website, and I collaborated with them really much. But they are also.
I was only named the guys in charge. I only named the ones in charge, Carl. Like, don't worry, there's Joe, there's Maria. Hi, Maria. Hi, Joe. Joe was on the podcast. Like, there's loads of them. There's just many amazing ones. I was just talking to Veli just now. Right, I'm planning on Veli, you know. So it's an amazing thing. I talked to so many bloody Finnish games researchers, you wouldn't believe. I was just naming the big cheeses in charge. I mean, What did you do with all these researchers? What has been your collaborations with Tampere University, for example?
Why I do it?
Oh, what? What was it? What did you do with them?
There's two different things. I have a collaboration with two of them. We have mainly shared data with them so they can analyze the data. It turned out that it was so interesting. So the data itself was so interesting. So language researchers started to join the educational researcher. And I've been writing lots of...
Go back. What data was this now? Come on, you're talking to two scientists, technically. She's one, but I pretend to be one. So, like, what was the data? Were you looking at Finnish teenagers' esports selfies going, look, they're terrible. No, here's everybody else.
I haven't done that collaboration. But the other one is that we have done evaluation of our part of our education, and it's more on the master and the bachelor level. So we have one excellent study on bachelor level from sports instructors that they have been following our students for 8 weeks. And 8 weeks is, as you know, very short time to get any positive result. But they actually did get very positive results after 8 weeks. And they were mostly eye to hand coordinations, exercises, both in the physical training and also in-game training. And all of the students were getting better after 8 weeks. And they also felt very, very much better by themselves and stuff like this. But we also have a master of, if the students themselves thinks that traditional sport or exercise should be a part of esport, or if it is a part of esport, and they all think that it's something positive that you have to do in order to perform better online. And then we have motivation aspects of esports and gaming and stuff like that.
I was playing with some Finnish guys recently, and we were laughing at my lack of headshots in CSGO. And one of them said to me, "You'd be so good in the Finnish army. We teach them to go for the body shot so they don't die, and then you can get the guy that comes to help his friend."
Oh my God.
So, I mean, with this, funny, but probably true, right? I mean, you know, Finland was there, Russia, World War II, loads history. You've got a military service, right? So, and you've got these programs. So, why aren't you producing more first-person shooter successes when you have people who are trained in real life and trained on games to be exceptional soldiers?
I can't answer that. Sorry. It's out of my league.
But this is what you're working towards. This is what you've seen, that you need to have more esports education in Finland, this land of amazing education.
Now you're inside this.
Oh, shout out to Timo, by the way.
The first person shooters, they describe it themselves that they could be out picking flowers. It doesn't mean anything. But of course, the context is upset. It's not very good to use in the school environment. And if I recall right correctly, you can't use, or you have very hard to use a first person shooter in the United States schools because of all the school
not
shooters.
A huge fan. No, yeah.
We have the same problem in Finland. We have also a lot of violence, or if you compare to Sweden, we have a lot of violence. Massacres in school. So it's not them. It was something that they started to argue about. Why do we have to have a Counter-Strike to show someone to killing each other in the school environment? It has been very easier to have Rocket League, for example, or Hearthstone, or.
Where is Finland strongest? And by the way, shout out to Narwhal. I think he's the one who made fun of the Finnish guy who made fun of my lack of headshots the most. Hi, Narwhal. I mean, if Finns are good, yeah. I really like Finnish people. I like the country. I mean, I research with them. I run networks with them. I play CSGO with them. But where are their strengths lying in terms of esports? Where if they're not encouraging CSGO, are we going to see the Finnish Rocket League, win the World Cup?
This is a tricky question. It's still a very strong Counter-Strike country. Rocket League is not that. This is a very few people who's really good on the Rocket League, and they are really, really badass. League of Legends, maybe.
I mean, it's a small country. What is it, like 3.5 million people?
Somewhere? No, it's 1 million more. Also. I think it's less.
Oh, yeah, because it's just a little bit smaller than Ireland.
Five. Yeah.
But you have it as a sport now, and you have these education programs. I mean, is the future looking good for Finnish esports, or is there much more work to be done to develop these streams of esports education?
I think there's lots more to do. For example, we are. I've been talking today with one officer at the city of Espoo, and then one e-sport organization to see how we could start an e-sport club education for kids that are 9 to 10 years old, and do it copycat ice hockey more or less, because I really love to compare e-sport with ice hockey because it there are so much in common. It's not that if you're an ice hockey player, you go to the public time and you do some skating. It's all what you can see that you're doing in e-sport.
NHL where maybe the Finnish could have a niche success platform with an ice hockey game, like just like the real Finnish hockey team outperformed their population size, right?
I think that FIFA is bigger.
Mm. Football again, Steph. Look, it's come up in another podcast.
FIFA players are a bit funny because they are season players. They are playing when it comes a tournament or when it drops out a new version of the game, and then if it doesn't meet the requirements, they stop playing it.
It's interesting that a lot of these really popular games in the country you're talking about are also the ones the schools don't want you playing, right? Because I've ran into similar things like this. I teach at a Catholic institution in the United States, and same thing, like they didn't want particularly violent games, and we had to have a conversation where, you know, many of the popular games in esports are quote unquote violent, you know, League of Legends, right, things like that. So how do you define what's okay and what's not? And things like CSGO, you know, they didn't like, but things like League of Legends or Valorant were okay-ish, right? And so I find that interesting that, like, again, there's, you know, there's schools wanting to be a part of this massive cultural thing, but also being kind of resistant to some aspects of it, right?
We need an esport based on the Crusades. They'd love that.
About violence.
When it comes to the most of the schools that have esport on the program, they are, if you take Sweden, for example, because you have the sports thing that the sports teacher is doing, and then you have an esports coach that's doing the esports coaching, and then you are most likely going for CSGO in Sweden, maybe League of Legends, but that's all. And when you have that kind of concept, the game itself is very important, because the sports teachers are the traditional sports that are doing this traditional sports thing, and then you have to hire a coach, and it's probably a former CSGO coach. However, on the path that I took, or the game itself is not important. So when you're talking about what next game is going to be the huge success in Finland, I don't know, because first of all, the most important for our students is that it's important to them. Esport has to be important. And you don't have to have good grades or something like this. It has to be important. And then we are focusing on so many other skills than just the in-game skills. So the game itself is not important either. And because we are not coaching them inside game, we are helping them doing a critical self-evaluation on the autumn and on the spring, and then you can compare these two dates with each other. And that's all what I believe the school should encourage you to do inside the game, because all the other skills are more important. So in our school, we have League of Legends team, we have Rocket League team, we have USU, we play piano or whatever it was. They have to come to me and say that I want to do this one because this is what interests me, and I want to be a part of the program. And then they have to explain to me why it could be an e-sport. I don't think that World of Warcraft, for example, is an esport because I play it myself, and I can't see the traditional sport. Because in my world, it has to be two teams against each other, not to slay a dragon on an epic raid. It's not an esport in my kind of thinking. The important is that you have an interest. You want to be better. You want, on some level, you want to be better. And also, the organizations have told us in Finland that they have no interest in hire one player. They want to have a team. If I can get the team during 3 years that knows each other and have this bonding, because they have been playing together, have been studying together, they have a strong bond to each other. That's the kind of team they want to have. And then they told me that if you can learn them all the other skills, that sportsmanship, physical training, ergonomics, and stuff like this, we can take care of the games.
I want to just ask you about the Esports Educator Handbook, and there'll be a link under the video to it. What is that, and where did that come from? Because it's in English, actually, so I was able to read a lot of it. Most of it, all of it. I can read English, but you know, I didn't get through it all.
From the beginning, it was Swedish. Then it turns out I was running a project from the Board of Education, founded by the Finnish Board of Education. And then the Finnish schools had some esport project as well, and they want to be a part of the handbook. So we wrote it in two different languages, or more exactly, we wrote it in English first. Because all my collaboration, this is Swedish speaking in Finland doesn't, by historic reasons, communicate that much with Finnish people. And I came into this and broke all the traditional rules about who is communicating with who. But the Finnish researchers or organization that I started to talk with, they said that we don't talk Swedish, but we are happy to talk English with you. So I have been documenting all the process in English. And now we have started to translate it to the other ones. But this handbook was how to document the path or the journey, because it has been a quagmire, walking upstairs in the uphill in the quagmire, because no one has been able to answer all my questions. When I contacted the Federation, first of all, they said they are coming from the Swedish community, we don't talk with you. And then they didn't understand the question, and then so I wanted to document all the process, so if someone else is going to do the same path, they don't have to make all my mistakes or stuff like this. And it's better to
have it. It's really cool, and it's free, and people can read it, so that's great. And the links are below this video.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And there was one more important thing. Of course, I forgot it.
Of course.
Well, maybe while you're thinking on it, I want to ask real quickly, what is something you would like to see other esports researchers work on? Is there, what would you like to see people who, again, are dedicating time, money, resources, study esports and education maybe specifically? What's one thing you'd like to see kind of explored?
Gender.
Hmm.
Steph, there you go. He's got a job for you.
Well, I agree.
I have a daughter that is 12, turning 13. When she was 7 or 8, the guys in school started to realize that they have the same kind of interest. And then they took her home, invited her home, and started to play Minecraft. Or testing her in Minecraft. And it turned out that she was a badass Minecraft player. So instead of encouraging her or thinking it's fun to play with her. They started to destroy her worlds, to destroy her buildings. And that's
awful.
Yeah, that's awful.
It's like really mean.
That's really, really mean. And I when I talked with the teacher at her school afterwards, I said that you have to encourage them or do something about this. That they, even though this is their students, even though it's they have games in school and stuff like this, they didn't want to take the responsibility. And they say that, you know, boys will always be boys. When they turn 13, it's so much going on in the boys' pants that you can behave how you want to do or stuff like this. There's lots of excuses why boys can continue doing all this toxic behavior while girls because in esport, gender doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're boy or girl.
It shouldn't, right? That's always, what we're saying is like, it shouldn't matter, but sadly it ends up mattering because of toxic behavior and because of things like that, right? So yeah, I agree. I would absolutely love to see more research always on gender, race, right? Other related topics. So yeah, I think that's great. Well, I think that does us for time, right, Brian?
Yep. I need food. It's evening time here. I am so hungry.
It's bedtime for you. So I think we'll go ahead and call it a wrap. As we said, there will be relevant links below wherever you're watching this video. Thank you so much, Kala, for being with us. This was really informative, and we appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you. Thank you
for having me. Thanks a million.
Yeah, bye. I'm just a little bit of a